recorder's not working. Oh. Okay. Sorry about that. All right. So, getting ready for Shavuos, I wanted to speak about what I would consider to be one major theme in Megillas Ruos, which really is, in my opinion, it's one of the major themes in leading up to Malchus Beis Dovin and the Melech HaMashiach, which is, as we know, that we lay Megillas Ruos on Shavuos for a number of reasons. Some say it's because it's the birthday / yahrzeit of David HaMelech, and Ruos is the Ima Shel Malchus. She's the mother of royalty. She led her life led up to David HaMelech, and as well as you know, all of the different themes that go on in Rus in terms of Geirus and Kabbalah HaTorah and things like that. So there's multiple reasons why we read Megillas Rus on Shavuos. I wanted this to discuss a little bit as a way of introduction to Rus, one major theme that I think can be learned out from the story that leads up to Megillas Rus, and that's basically, this is a topic that's been done many times over, but I wanted perhaps to give a little bit of a new spin on it, is the stories that come up in Sefer Bereishis, which lead to the union between Rus and Boaz, that come up between the basically three stories that lead to the Malchus Beis Dovid as we know it. Number one is the story of Lot and his daughters. Number two is the story of Yehuda and Tamar. And number three is the actual marriage between Rus and Boaz. And, you know, there's a ton to say on all of these incidents and how they fit into pretty much everything and just what's shot in the incidents themselves. And we're not going to even begin to scratch the surface of these topics, but I wanted to be able to show one major theme that goes throughout, which is really the theme that in all of these cases, there was a, you know, I stress the idea of feminism here. I think this is one of the makor for Jewish feminism, that there was a man who was really willing to give up hope and not, you know, basically to throw in the towel in his life work. And there was a strong woman who pushed through for this ability to, you know, basically refuse to be miyayish, didn't give up hope, and it led to great results in each case. Some a little bit more dubious than others, but still it led to a very positive resolution and eventually gave the Malchus Beis Dovid and the Melech HaMashiach the tools that it needed to come into existence. Just take one of these. Okay, so let's start with the story of Lot and his daughters. This comes up in Parshas Vayera, and it really begins after the much more famous incident of Avraham being visited by the three Malachim. And I don't know when I exactly learned Parshas Vayera in elementary school, but we definitely skipped this story. And I'm a little embarrassed to say at what age I started doing Shnaya Mikra and discovered it. And I remember I was sitting in a certain Beis Medrash at the time, and I'm reading Parshas Vayera. It must have been, you know, that time of year. And I literally said out loud, "They did what?" Like, I couldn't believe it. I was like blown away that I was, you know, however many years old I was, and I had never heard the story before. But it's a very interesting story when you take it in context. Seems to be that it doesn't belong in the rest of the story, and it's just giving you a nice piece of side information, but in the grand scheme of things, it plays a major role. So let's take a look at some of the psukim. We'll try to refer back and forth. I tried to keep the number of actual mefarshim down to a very small number so as not to get sidetracked. But a lot of the things I'll try to say over, most of them are not at all my own. Most of them are based in the standard classical mefarshim, just if you taste one of each. So, let's take a look in the Psukim in Perek Yites and Sefer Bereishis and Parshas Vayera. Vayavo shnei ha-malachim sdoma ba'erev, v'lot yoshev b'shar stom, v'yar lot, v'yakom l'krasam, v'yishtachvo apayim arza. So Lot, much like his mentor Avram Avinu, was sitting outside, and apparently, I don't know if he was looking for guests, but he was sitting outside and he saw these people coming in, and he bowed down to them. Vayomer hineinu Adonai suruna el beis avet. First, he invites them to come in, and they refuse. They say, "No, we'll just sleep out here, no problem." He really pushed them. They made a party. They baked matzah, right? Their second matzah meal of the day. They had a meal of matzah earlier from Avram Avinu, and now they went to Lot. They had the matzah by him. So now they're going to you know, spend the night. But before Terem Yishkava, before they were able to lie down, so the first thing, I tried to underline the psukim that I wanted to point out as major themes here. So I underline, it says, so you have this a very strong representation of all ages that came to get these guests and what did they want to do with them. Take them out for us so that we may know them. And this is the, I believe, the source for the word sodomy, that that they basically took the, they said, we want to bring these men out and we want to have our way with them. And So for starters, it's just interesting to point out that the entire town was represented. The entire city was represented in terms of age brackets. You would think if you're going to have an angry mob that's going to, you know, grab their torches and pitchforks and they're going to go outside somebody's house and try to commit immoral acts, you probably leave the kids at home. You know, I think everybody, even the most immoral of people, try not to act that way in front of their children. So yet here they brought the kindalach. They said, you know, let's go. We're going to go, you know, have our way with some guests. And they bring the children and they say, come, let's go sin with them. And it's very difficult to understand why they brought it. So the Medrash explains that this was in the laws of Sodom. And in fact, if you skip the pasuk test for a second, we'll get back to earlier before in a second, but they've skipped the pasuk test. Vayomru gesh hala, come over here, and they said vayomru ha echad bala gur vayishpot shafot ata. Right, it says you come here and you're going to judge us. You're going to, in other words, the Medrash explains that they were very angry at Lot for trying to prevent them from doing this, because they had it in their constitution that was written up in the laws of Sodom that anyone who comes into Sodom and brings in guests, this is what's supposed to be done to him. So they didn't view this as an immoral act at all. They said, this is what we're supposed to be doing. If somebody tries to bring guests into our territory, the rule is that we consider ourselves to be very classy community, and we don't allow outsiders in. And therefore, this is our way of preventing, you know, the riffraff from moving into Sodom. If anybody comes in as a guest, So they're treated as such, and we're not embarrassed about it. This is what we do. And we're so not embarrassed that we bring the children, we bring the old people, and everybody's on board with this. They understand. It's like coming out to teach them about the laws of the land. So this is actually an educational trip for the children. And they basically tell Lot, you are wrong, we're right, and you have no right to say anything, and we're going to punish you worse than we punish them. So here you have the fact that the Sodomites brought out all of their people, and they're basically proud of what they're going to do to Lot, and Lot tries to turn them back. Right? If you look back to Pasuk Zion, it says, "Vayomar al no achai tareo, please, my brothers, do not do this evil. Hine no li shte banos asher lo yadu ish." Says, "I have two daughters who have not known anybody," meaning they're unmarried. Says, I'm going to send them out. Whatever you want to do, do. Have your way with them. Says, just to these men, don't do anything to them, because they came in, you know, they came in for my protection. They came in to be my guests. I don't want you to be able to do anything to them. My own daughters, no problem. I'll send them out, right? And he gets, you know, obviously this was a very strange decision on Lot's part. He says, obviously he grew up in the house of Avram Avinu, so maybe he could, Cheshbon, Avram Avinu didn't have any children, so he never learned from Avram Avinu how to treat his own children, but he learned from Avram Avinu that you treat the guests very well. So this was the crooked Cheshbon that he made in his mind, that you can't do anything to my guests. I invited them in, and they're under my protection, but certainly I'll give you my daughters. And the people refused. They wanted to do things their way. They had no beef with the daughters. They had nothing, you know, nothing to say about that. They'd much rather deal with the guests. So obviously, I skipped a few psukim here, and the malachim basically blinded everyone who was there. They shut them out, and they said to Lot, "All right, we have to get our party together. We're about to destroy this place." So that's the story that starts off the destruction of the city of Sodom. They show up. Lot brings them in. The people of the city try to hurt them. They basically defend themselves after Lot offers his daughters up as sacrifices. And then the Malachim take care of business and they inform Lot, we're actually Malachim and we're going to destroy this place. We're not here as guests. We were here to, you know, you could... Pashto says they were there to give Sodom its final test, right? This was the final exam for Sodom, or perhaps the final exam for Lot, to see if he was worthy of being saved, and he may have passed, or we're not even sure if he passed or failed, but he is worthy of being saved either because Avram davened for him or because he is simply, you know, good enough on his own as being contrasted with the people of Sodom. So Lot is being saved, and they tell him, you have to get your things together. Vayomer in Pasuk Yud Beis, they say, Od mi lecha po, chasanu vanecho v'nosecha v'chol asher lecha ba'ir hotzei min hamakom. Whoever you have in this city, if you have sons-in-law, you have sons, you have daughters. So whenever I used to read this Pasuk, I always thought they were asking a question. Did the Malachim not know who the members of Lot's family were? Because on one hand, we generally assume Lot had two daughters, and that's it. They're the only ones who are officially mentioned. But if you keep reading, so in Pasuk Yudalit, it says, Vayetze Lot vayidaber el chasanov, lokhei ben osav. He spoke to his sons-in-law who were married to his daughters. Vayomer kumutzu min hamakom hazeh, ki mashkis Hashem ha'ir, vayhi ki mitzachek b'nei chasanov. So that Hashem is going to destroy this city, and they thought he was joking. They didn't take him seriously. So if he had sons-in-law, he must have had more daughters. How do you know there were more daughters? Right, the others he specifically said are unmarried. So he had two single daughters, but he definitely had sons-in-law in addition to them, so which meant he had married daughters and most likely grandchildren as well. If you take a look in on the other sheet, the Ramban points this out. The Ramban, in source number one, says, V'yitachin shehayu lo banim gedolim nesuei nashim. He probably had grown-up sons who were married. And he first spoke to his sons-in-law. He says, all right, my own sons, of course they'll leave with me. That's a piece of cake. They're my sons. My sons-in-law, right? Try getting your son-in-law to do the same thing. Not so fast. They're going to need some convincing. So he figured he'd speak to his sons-in-law first. But so his sons-in-law were laughing at him. So it took a long time to try to convince them to come with him. So Hashachar Olav Amalachim Lohinichu Lakachas Rakanim Tzemosoba Ito Babais. So in the end, he spent all night arguing with his sons-in-law, trying to get them to come and bring the wife, his actual daughters, bring the grandkids, and they all refused. And by the time everything was said and done, he had to get out of there. So already two interesting things that you see from Lot. Number one is he lost children in Sodom during this incident. Lot had children who died in Sodom. He had children and probably grandchildren as well. And number two, he not only lost them, but he lost face in the eyes of his daughters, certainly, saying the daughters, they're capable of hearing what he tried to do to them. And so his other children, they just think he's crazy. In other words, according to the Ramban, his sons-in-law think he's crazy. His daughters probably, you know, go much more with the husband than they will with the father. So they think their father's crazy. His sons might think at this point that he didn't even bother trying to get them out. So Lot, when he's leaving Sodom, this is a very, very difficult thing for him. That all goes without saying that he's now faced with the fact that he made the single greatest mistake of his life. I didn't give you the psukim, but if you remember from Parshas Lech Lecha, Lot was the first guy who ever tried to have everything. Right? He looked at when Avram, he got in a fight with Avraham, whether or not, at the time was Avram, I guess, he got in a fight with Avram, that whether or not the shepherds were going to graze in certain people's fields, and he looked around for a place to go, and he saw Sodom and Amor, he saw that area, and there's a very interesting line that the Chumash uses to describe it. He said he saw it was Kigan Hashem, Eretz Mitzrayim. It was like the Gan Hashem Eretz Mitzrayim. Lot was the first Jew, he was the first person who had this concept, what the Jews have since taken over, of you can have everything. You can be the biggest in Gashmias and the biggest in Ruchnias, and you can be an Avram Avinu living in the Gan Hashem, just in a much nicer house with much nicer fields and much better cattle. So I'm going to be the best of everything. Avram Avinu, so Avram Avinu was obviously a very wealthy man, but the place that he lived in was not, it wasn't a combination of Gan Hashem, Eretz Mitzrayim. He doesn't have everything. I'm going to have it all. I'm going to have the best in Ruchnius and the best in Gashmius. Right? So Lot tried this on, and basically he sees that the whole thing is a colossal failure. He ended up thinking, as many do, that I'm going to go to this place and I'm going to be the one who makes it. I'm going to be the one who survives. I'm going to be the one who convinces everybody that my way is the best, and my neighbors will take to it. They'll go along with me, and we'll all end up being big tzaddikim. Just we'll have all the best things in life. And in the end, he ends up, you know, his daughters and sons end up marrying locals, and it leads to their destruction. So Lot is faced not only with the tragedy of losing children, but he's also faced with the fact that he made a huge mistake and he couldn't have been more wrong about this choice. And it led to his entire family, save his wife and two daughters, being destroyed.
And the place was going to be destroyed.
Right, but right, but this was, he chose to be there. Meaning he could have been anywhere on earth. He chose to be there. He said, I'm going to make it work here because this is my best option. Avraham Avinu said, go anywhere you want. I'll just go in the other direction. And he chose this place because he thought it was going to work out perfectly for him. And it was literally the opposite. You know, the opposite happened, that it worked out horribly. And the only reason his two daughters were alive was that they didn't get a chance to fully assimilate into the culture yet by marrying some of the locals. But he basically doomed his entire family. And not only, so that's for starters. And what happens, obviously, this is a very difficult time for him. So if you skip to Pasuk Tezayin, Vayismama, he's delaying, right? We know there's the Shalshelis on top of Vayismama to indicate how much he was delaying and how much he was weighing the decision back and forth. This famous comment by one of the Rishonim, the Ri Ibn Kaspi, has this statement that when you see a Shalshelis, it always points to a tremendous indecision. You're going back and forth and you can't decide what to do. Here also, he's stuck. He knows he's literally leaving everything behind. Not just his possessions, which obviously were very dear to him, but his family, his children, and his grandchildren perhaps. He's leaving everything behind. And finally, Yachziku anashim biyado uv'yad ishto v'yashnei b'nosav b'chemlas Hashem alav. Only because of the pity that Hashem felt for him, which is implying that he didn't really deserve any of this, especially now that the Malachim tell him his entire plan is up in smoke, everything is doomed, and still he wants to stay. He can't leave it behind. So even after being told you made the biggest mistake of your life, he can't own up to it, he can't leave, and he has to be literally dragged out of there by these Malachim and you know, with his family in tow. And they left him outside the city. And what did they tell him? The famous thing, Pasuk Yud Zayin, right? Vayiko tziyamo sama chutzah vayomer himalait al nashecha al tabit acharecha. Do not turn around. Don't look back. Right? So why wasn't he allowed to look back? Why wasn't he allowed to look back? Right. So the Medrash, Rashi quotes the Medrash, that he didn't deserve to see the destruction of Sodom, because as we pointed out in the previous Pasuk, this was all Bechemlas Hashem Alav. This was all because Hashem took pity on him, either for the sake of Avram, or perhaps in the schus of the mitzvah that he did. He was not necessarily any better than they were. And he was being told, Bepem Moli, by these Malachim, you're no better than they are. You have protectia, you have some special deal, you're getting out. No one else, you don't really deserve to get out, but you certainly do not deserve to see the justice that's being meted out to your fellow Anshei Sodom, to your fellow Sodomites. This is all a freebie, and therefore you have to keep going and just take the gift and run with it. But what happens, his wife, Atabet Ishto Me'achara Bati Netziv Melech, his wife couldn't, I don't know, she couldn't resist, she didn't believe it, whatever it was, she turned around, she turned into a pillar of salt, right, which Rashi points out was some kind of mida keneged mida for the way she acted. But nevertheless, Lot loses his wife. So now he's lost not only his all of his possessions, not only his self-esteem in terms of having made all the wrong decisions, but not only that, he basically says that he basically realizes that he lost his wife as well, and he has nothing left. He has his two daughters, and he has to go. So you can imagine at this point, you have Lot with his two daughters. His two daughters probably don't fully grasp what happened in the sense that, you know, they were younger, obviously, to the extent they weren't married. And the younger you are, the less gravity of life, you know, weighs down on you. You don't realize exactly what the situation is. And they come up with a plan. They're left in a cave together, and they come up with a plan. So what do they say? So Pasuk Lamed Aleph, I skipped some sukkim there. Vatomer Abchir El Atzira Avinu Zaken Ve'ish Ein Ba'aretz Lavo Aleinu Kiderach Kol Aretz. Our father is very old, or he's just old, and there is no other man to be upon us the way as is the way of the world. So if you take a look quickly in source number 3 on the other side in the Malbim, so he points, he just gives a quick synopsis of some of the Mefarshim here. It says, Vatomer Habachira, the older one says to the younger one, she's clearly the leader in this idea, Avinu Zakein, what does it mean our father is old? Lo yuchal laleches el medina acheres lagur sham. Says, we can't go, we can't schlep him to somewhere else to live. We can't leave him behind because he's too old. Meaning, so on one hand, so this is going with the opinion that they knew it had only been Sodom and Amorah that were destroyed. So they said, but what are we going to do? We're going to all die here, and our lineage is going to die out with us because our father's too old to be schlepped around to travel somewhere else, and we can't abandon him. Upo ein ish lavo aleinu, and there are no men left over here. So he's in here, what was their whole intention of doing this? It was that they didn't want their father to die childless. So what happened? They saw the pain of their father. They saw the fact that their father was completely out of it. He was completely, you know, depressed, realizing that he was going to die without any kind of heirs, and his daughters were basically going to be the only thing that lives on from him, and they would carry on the names of their own husbands. And therefore, they hatched this plan, let's try to bring forth a progeny from our father. And that's Ukamosh Kozim Chazal, Shilashem Shamayim Niskavnu. That's what Chazal meant when it says the daughters of Lot intended that what they were doing, Lashem Shamayim. Meaning that according to this Mahalach, what does it mean, Lashem Shamayim? That they did this out of the goodness of their heart for their father. They saw their father's despondency, and they said, it can't be this way. We have to help him. We have to do what's right by him. So they hatched this plan. That's one Mahalach. The other Mahalach says, V'kol shekein, and certainly, l'mefarshim, like Rashi, she'choshvu she'nase kloya b'chol ha'olam, they thought the entire world had been destroyed. V'haya kavanasam l'hakim mostos tevo. They wanted to repopulate the earth. So basically what the Malbim is summarizing is that there are two basic Mahalchim as to what the daughters of Lot thought was going on here. Either, like Rashi made famous, that they thought the whole world was destroyed and it's their job to repopulate the world, so they were certainly doing it L'Shem Shamayim, they wouldn't have any intentions of doing an Avera. Or you could say, according to the other opinion, that they just wanted to let their father know that he was going to live on through his children. And it couldn't have been through his daughters, because if his daughters would go marry someone else, then the shame of their father would be gone. So it was almost like this completely corrupted form of yibum, that they were trying to rekindle the name of their father through having children from him. And that explains a lot. If we look back in the Psukim, so what happens? So they have this whole plan in Pasuk Lamed Beis. L'cha nashke esavinu yayin v'nishkeva imo v'nechayeme avinu zara. We're going to get him drunk, right? He's going to get very, very drunk. That's where the halachic concept called shechruso shalot comes from. That a person who gets drunk to the extent of shechruso shalot, he's like dino keshote. He has no halachic status of mitzvos. Because he really has no idea what's going on. So they get him so drunk that they're able to do what they need to do with him. And says, Vateshkenes Aviyim Balayla, one second. Balayla hu vatavo abachir vatishkov asaviyah velo yada b'shechva uvkuma. So the older daughter First is with him, and he doesn't know anything about it. So then he says, okay, I did my job last night, let's do it again. And in Pasuk Lamed Hey, Vatashkena Gamba Laila Hahu Esavi and Yoin Vatokam Atzir Vatishkav Imo Velo Yoda B'Shechva Kuma. Again, he did not know, and what had happened. So there's a whole. I think Rashi is the one who points it out that there are the small dots on top of the words Velo Yoda that he didn't know. So I think it's Rashi who points out that you're supposed to understand from the dots on top of the words that he knew something was up. He didn't think everything was just terrific. You know, something was going on. There was a reason his daughters were getting him drunk like this. But on the other hand, you can imagine Lot was only too happy to just get drunk out of his mind because his whole life had just fallen apart in front of his eyes. So this is the first example that we have of this strange form of Yibum that occurs and how it goes down. So basically, it ends off at Pasuk Lamed Vav. Vatarena shtei benos Lot me'avien. They both became pregnant. Vatela habachira vatbein vatikrashmo Moav. She called him Moav, which is two words. What are the words? That's she, right? From father. Me'av, right? Min of or whatever. Moav hu avi Moav arayom. That's where the nation of Moav came from. Vatziira gamhi yolda ben vatikrashmo ben ami. So she was trying to be a little more tznua about it. So she called the son Ben Ami, hu avi b'nei Amon arayom. And that child was called Ben Ami, and that was the nation of Amon. So this is the birth of the nations of Amon and Moab. This is where they come from. So it's interesting that the basis for the nations of Amon and Moab, and as we know, Rus was from the nation of Moab, this is where she came from, and this is the birth of the nation of Moab that eventually begets Rus. So this is very, very shrouded in all kinds of indignity, and it's very difficult to understand how anything good ever came from this strange communion between father and daughter. But on the other hand, we do understand something going on here. What the daughters wanted for their father was to give him some solace, was to give him something going forward, especially according to the first opinion that the Malbim quotes, that they were trying to give him a progeny, even though they themselves could have gone off on their own and gotten married and had their own happy lives. But they were trying to give the father some consolation, some knowledge that he would live on. They wanted to do a tremendous amount of chesed for their father. They wanted to, and again, L'shem Shemayim, you can imagine somebody does something like this, L'shem Shemayim, they get absolutely no hanah from it. Right? In general, there is a comment in the Gemara of Avodah Zarah that there used to be a much bigger Yetzirah for incest than there is today, but still, it's not something which the average normal person gets any kind of hanah from whatsoever. And therefore, they did this 100% L'shem Shemayim. They did it to help their father. Now, it's interesting. If you look in source number 4, these are the psukim in the end of Parshas Achrei Mos, in the Yisurei Arayos. It says, V'ish asher yikach es achoso bas avivo basimo, v'ro'os ervoso, v'hisires ervoso. If a man has an incestuous relationship with a sister, yes, I underline the words. What's it called? Well, it's in source number 4, the underlined words there. What does it say there? Chesed hu. V'nichrusu le'enei b'nei amam erva sachoso gilo. And they get karis. They did chesed. So all the mafarshim are like, chesed? Right? I don't know. Here in yeshiva, we give out chesed points. We had a chesed award ceremony on Sunday. So definitely not talking about this kind of chesed. Right? So what does it mean it's chesed? So l'chor, this is exactly it. It's the exact misuse of the midah of chesed, meaning a person who is supposed to marry someone that they are shayach to marry, and they're supposed to give everything that they have over to that other person is as the ultimate act of chesed. A person, has to be a baal chesed, right? What's he saying? Charity starts in the home, right? But it's true, you have many people that they don't understand what chesed means. They do a lot of chasadim, but they don't necessarily treat people well. Right, and they might treat other people well, but they don't necessarily treat their own families well, and they might not treat their own wives well, their own children. Right, so that's a misplaced skewed, you know, messed up version of chesed. That's not what real chesed is. Now, what the Torah is telling you is that the idea of giving over all of yourself to a spouse, that should be the ultimate act of chesed. Yet here, we see that that's not something that's ever supposed to be between a brother and a sister. So when you have this incestuous relationship, that's the ultimate example of chesed gone awry. That's chesed that you were supposed to give over all of yourself and you did it to absolutely the wrong person. And therefore, we're saying that, but in its roots, it's chesed. It's just a totally misused chesed, and therefore, you're chayav karis for it. But the idea is similar to what we're seeing here, meaning we hear about Lot and his daughters and we're just disgusted by it, and, you know, rightfully so. But on the other hand, it was a misuse of the concept of chesed. They did it b'toras chesed. They didn't do it. They didn't do it in order to get any hanah from themselves. Now, obviously, there are ways to do chesed, and there are ways to do chesed, and maybe what they did wasn't necessarily so great, but it came from the right place. Yeah.
Lot also had this misguided chesed when he offered his own daughters up.
Right, exactly.
So I guess kind of they learned
this. Right, right. And not only that, but all of this was misguided, meaning Lot's entire hashkafa got so skewed. Right, there's so much to say on this. I recently listened to some of Rabbi Foreman's shiurim on this. It's also, there's so much to say on it. And I thought, you know, after I heard the shiur, I wanted to, you know, try to find more ideas to elaborate on his ideas because they were so good. And I thought that really you see that this entire Kigan Hashem Ke'eretz Mitzrayim Mahalach that Lot went on, it just completely skewed his concept of chesed, his concept of what's right and wrong, and he just had no idea anymore. His moral compass was so off that he couldn't tell the difference anymore. And that was the most depressing thing for him. He says, how did I get here from the house of Avram Avinu, the ultimate pillar of chesed, and now I'm doing chesed like this? You know, that was my thing. You know, I was the quintessential, I was the Talmud Muvok of the quintessential Baal Chesed, and this is where I am now. You know, so it was, that was the source of his depression. But one thing we see here is the birth of the nation of Moab came from this attempt at Chesed. And it came from this idea that I'm going to give completely of myself for someone else. Now, it was messed up, and that's why it wasn't quote unquote a Jewish chesed. It was a Moabite chesed. It was a chesed that led to a nation of sinners. But on the end of it, there was a lot of good mixed up in there. There was this idea of the man Lot being completely miyayish, giving up hope completely, and, you know, having no plans for the future, and the women, his daughter, saying, no, we have plans for your future. We don't want you to give up. We want something great to come from you. We've seen your great side, even though now what you see in front of you is a broken shell of a man, but we've seen what you can be, and we want that to continue. We want this for you. And that chesed lived on, but it lived on in a messed up way in the forms of Ammon and Moab. That's the idea that we have so far. I want to now move on to the second of the three incidents, the incident of Yehuda and Tamar. So again, this comes up in an interesting way. It starts off in Perek Lamed Ches, Pasuk Aleph, Vayhi Be'eis Ahi, Vayered Yehuda Me'eis Echav. Yehuda, he went down from his brothers, Vayed Arish Adulami, Ushmo Chira, right? And Vayarsham Esbas Ish Kenani, Ushmo Shua, Vayikachel Vayavo Elel. Right, so he marries the daughter of this Canaanite man, and he has children with her. He has three sons, second one Onan, and the third one Shelah. He has three sons. Now, before we get any further, you have to try to establish a mindset for Yehuda here as well. Where was Yehuda coming from? So this is right after the incident of Mechiras Yosef. And they come back to Yaakov Avinu, and Yaakov basically says, I refuse to be consoled. I'm going to die a depressed, broken man, and there's nothing anybody can do about it. And now Yehuda takes the fall for that. If you take a look in source number 4, part 2, second source number 4, sorry about that. Rashi says, "Vayhi be'esahi lama nismacha parsha zulakan." Why do we find the story here? "V'hifsik be'parsha so shel Yosef." It's cutting the story of Yosef in half. Lilamed shahoridu echav migdulaso kishero b'tzaras avim. When his brothers saw the pain that the father was in, they kicked him out of being the leader. Amru ata amarta lamachro, ilu amarta lahashivo hayinu shomen lecha. You told us to sell him. We listened to you for that. We would have even listened to you had you told us to bring him back. In other words, we trusted in you that you were not leading us down a path that we would regret. And you led us down this path, and now we regret it terribly. And therefore, they basically kicked him out, and they said, go on your way, you're not our leader anymore, we're angry at you. And Yehuda, obviously, I don't know what he was when he became the leader of the brothers, but when you're a leader and you get deposed, you know, I foolishly once asked a friend of mine who didn't make partner in a firm, and then he basically quit. So I said, I don't understand, why don't you just stay on? And he said, when you don't make partner, you don't stay on. He says, you move on. So he says, Yehuda was the leader. He says, you don't hang around just being one of the guys anymore when you used to be the leader. You move on. You don't go back to being a normal citizen. And he was, so you can understand already the state of mind of Yehuda basically being sent into Gullus by his brothers after being kicked out of the rule of leader. And he marries, and he has three sons, Er, Onan, and Shelah. So he marries his Bechor heir to a girl named Tamar. So the Bechor of Yehuda was bad in the eyes of Hashem, and Hashem killed him. So again, it's interesting. The Pasuk right away tells you this had nothing to do with his wife. Because what ends up happening is Yehuda on some level thinks that his wife is doing this, right? There's the Mishnayos and Ksuvos talk about a katlanis, a black widow, right? You have a woman who keeps marrying husbands and they keep dying. So do we blame the wife after a certain point? So Yehuda, as we'll see, is blaming the wife. He does not see his sons for what they really are, and he thinks that it has something to do with Tamar, and therefore. The Pasuk, I think, is going out of its way to tell you it has nothing to do with her. She's a big tzaddikis, and it was because he was bad in the eyes of Hashem. Vayhi er b'chor Yehuda rabbi Hashem. So we just read that. Sorry, Pasuk Chet. Vayomer Yehuda la'onan bo'el eshes achicha v'yabei mosav v'akim zera la'achicha. So he says, okay, marry your sister-in-law Tamar, and you will accomplish the mitzvah of Yibum, and you will raise a zera for your brother. Meaning, just as we saw before, the daughters of Lot wanted to have a child from their father, and according to one shot in the Malbim, to continue his lineage, so too, Yehuda says to his son, go fulfill the mitzvah of Yibum with your sister-in-law, and you will have a son who will carry on the name of your dead brother. And Bedafka, because of that, the pasuk says, "Vayeda Onan ki lo yeh hazera." Says Onan saw that it would not be his child. Apparently, he was a very selfish individual, and he was not interested in having any children if they would not be linked to him. Rather, everybody would see his bechor and say, "Oh yeah, that's the bechor of Er. That's the son of Onan. That's the one that that's the one that lived on, even though Er died out." And it's interesting, Rabbi Foreman, I think, pointed out, when you see the name Er, he's given the name Er because Er means what? He says he's awake. He's still awake, right? So so we're trying to keep him alive. Even though he's dead, the goal of everything that goes on is to try to keep him alive, trying to give him back that life that he didn't have for himself. So Onan basically, refused to try to have a son with his wife. And Hashem killed him as well. Fine. So Vayomer Yehuda l'Tamar kalaso. So what does Yehuda say now? He just lost two sons to this woman. Again, let's just try to understand what we're talking about with Yehuda. Yehuda was once the leader of the Shiftei Ka. He wasn't the favorite son, but he was the leading son. He went now from being the leader to being kicked out by his brothers, off on his own, started a family. That is turning into be a colossal failure. His two oldest sons just died. He's got nothing left. He doesn't have his role in the family anymore. He doesn't have his own family anymore. He lost two sons. And now he's nervous for his third son. And his daughter-in-law, this wonderful woman, whom he thinks is killing his sons, not literally, but because there's some bad zechus that she has, which is killing the sons, he doesn't want her to marry his third son. He's going to be literally left with nothing. So what is he supposed to do? So he does a terrible thing to her. He says, Shvi almana beis avich ad yigdal shela b'ni ki amar pen amus gam hu ke'echav. So he says, stay here as an almana, because until my son Shela grows up. So it sounds like he was just pushing her off. He just wanted to delay the, you know. So some say, an interesting pshat, some say because Shela was still too young to be chayiv in mitzvos, so there was no mitzvahs yibum for him now, but when he would be older, there would be a mitzvahs yibum for him. Obviously, the Torah ain't a mitzvah biyosek, because there was no Torah, but so there would be a mitzvahs yibum for him, so he would be protected by the mitzvah, and therefore would be okay. But the pashtus in the words is just that Yehuda just couldn't bring it in him, he didn't have it in him to give his remaining son over to this woman, lest he die. And he was scared that his son was going to die. And he lost everything else. He couldn't lose this too. And so, Vatelech Tamar Vateshev Beis Aviyah. She returns home. Vayirbu Hayam. So it's a long time. This is a long time now. Vatamas Bashua Ashes Yehuda. And Yehuda's wife dies. So now he has nothing. He has two sons that are dead. One son whom he's refusing to marry off, a daughter-in-law who he basically made into an aguna, and now he's all alone. So what happens? He goes on a trip, and if you turn the page, it says, Vayugad leTamar. So Tamar hears, Leimor hine chamich ole timnasa lagos tzono. He says, your father-in-law is coming. So now, Vatasar bigde almanusa me oleha. I never noticed this, where a foreman pointed out in one of the talks, he said that she was still wearing her big day almanus after all these years. He says, you see the loyalty that she had to try to accomplish this mitzvah, she basically treated herself as an almana the whole time. And we all know what happens. She disguises herself as a zona, and Yehuda comes to her. So everyone always asks the question, how could it be that Yehuda agreed to be with the Zona? So obviously the question is going to be better than any answer you're going to give. But if you understand the state of mind that Yehuda was in at the time, he was broken. He was completely lost. He would probably at this point do anything for a little bit of consolation. And yes, he was still obviously, as we see in the continuation, he was still looked up to by his peers. He was probably a man of great means, and he was considered a judge, and he was all these things, but inside he was broken. He had just lost his wife. He had lost his two kids. His third kid was, you know, never going to add up to anything at this point. And he just did what happened. You can understand where a man in that position, not that it's an excuse, but you can see a man in that position, he's completely broken. He doesn't really care that much what happens to him anymore. And he agrees, he agrees to pay her a certain amount. The Gdi Izim, Rashi points out that it was Dafka, a goat, because that represents the sin of Yosef, that they dipped the coat of Yosef in the blood of a Gdi. But that wasn't good enough. He said it doesn't have one right. He doesn't have any money on him right now. So Pazi Yirches Vayomer Ma'ir Ravona Sher Etein Loch Vatomer Chosamcho Psilcho Matcha Sher Biyodech. He says you have to give me all of these things. And you see, what are you, crazy? I'm going to give, like, the most recognizable things that I own? Like, I'll give you $1,000 in cash. I'm not going to give you my credit cards. I'm not going to give you my cufflink, my personalized cufflinks with my initials on them. He gives her his signet ring. He gives her his walking stick. These were very intimate items that a person owned. They were very, you know, these were single items that were basically identifiable as yours. So you see what kind of state of mind he was in. He just like, all right, you asked for this, I'll give it to you, no problem. Whatever, it doesn't matter. And he gives it to her. Finally, you know, we find out that he tries to pay her off. He sends a messenger back and he tries to give her the money, he tries to give her the goat, she's not around anymore, and in Pasuk Chaf Gimel, Vayomer Yehuda Tikachla, all right, let her keep what she has, no big deal, I'll let her keep the collateral, Penye Lavuz, because this is going to turn into a really embarrassing situation, Hine Shalachti Agdi Azev Atalom Tzosa, I tried to pay her off, I didn't find her, so she can keep what she has. And then finally, we know what happens. It's told to Yehuda that his daughter-in-law, who's officially what we call a Shomeris Yavam, she's not supposed to be marrying anybody else. She's pregnant, so that obviously means that she had some kind of an affair, which apparently in those days was punishable by death, and not just any cheerful death, but Sreifa. And he takes her out. She's going to be burned. And finally in Pasuk Chaf Hei, it says, "He mutseis v'hi sholcha el chameha." She sends a message to her father-in-law, Leimor, Le'isha sherlo anochi harava tomer haker no lemi hachosemes v'apsilim v'amate ha'elim. Unbelievable. We learn the famous halacha, Noach lo la'odnam sheyapil atzma l'toch kivshon ha'esh v'al yalbim pnei chavero b'ravim. Better for a person to throw himself into a fiery furnace than to publicly embarrass his fellow individual. And, you know, we learn this from here. She could have easily shouted out his name. She could have easily identified him via the signet ring. And she said, "Haker na." Right? Well, what's the famous line that Rashi always uses? "Ein na elaloshin bakosha." She was asking. She was making it very, very clear to Yehuda, "I will not tell that it's you if you don't want me to. But I'm asking you, please recognize that this is yours. And understand what it is that I did and why it is that I did it." And she said, "I did this for you. I did this for your son so that his name would move on. You don't understand because you're so despondent, you're so lost, you don't see the greatness that's contained in your family, but I do. I realize that your lineage is something that's worth continuing on. I waited as a widow for your youngest son because I know there's greatness there." And she sees it even though he was Rav Einei Hashem. He was a Rasha. But she saw the greatness. She wanted to be a part of it. She wanted to bring forth lineage from this family. And she refused to give up. And she said to him, "I'll end it all right here if it means embarrassing you publicly. But I'm telling you, snap out of it already. Wake up out of this funk. Don't be depressed the way you are. And realize that we can accomplish something great here." And finally, Vayaker Yehuda. Yehuda recognized, obviously the Parshat Shad is he recognized his stuff, but you could add to it and say, he recognized what was going on here. He recognized the situation and saw that this woman had it right, and she understood what he had been missing out on in his own despondency, in his own depression. And she saved him. Vayomer tzadka mimeni ki alkein lo nasati. So we see the second step in the birth of the two major players in Megillas Rus. Now we see the lineage of, as we come to Pasuk Chaf Tes, there were twins there, there was Zerach and Peretz, and Zerach was really supposed to come out first, and what happens? Right, it says, Vatomer, in Pasuk Chaf Tes, Vayhi kemeshiv yado vihine yotza achiv. First, Zerach sticks his hand out. Must not have been a very easy birth. Zerach sticks his hand out, then it goes back in, and then Peretz comes out. Vatomer ma paratzta alecha Peretz. Right? Vatikra shmo Peretz. It says, you forced your way through. Right? But we see that that's actually very, very appropriate. It's Dafka Peretz who becomes the great, 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 great grandfather of the Melech HaMashiach. It's Dafka because, as we see so far, these were situations of despondency where everything else was supposed to go a different way, and In the other cases, the daughters of Lot, Tamar, they forced the situation. They said, "No, we won't let it go down like this. We won't let it fall into despair." And they pushed through. And they refused to allow the situation to give into depression. And they said, "It has to be better than this. There's more here going on than we see. And we're going to save this for the next generation." And they did. And so you see, the baby had that personality. The baby had that ability to push through, even though it seemed the other one was going to come out first. And that is the second leg of the journey. The third leg we're going to have to do super quickly. Sorry about that. Basically, we have the story of Rus coming back with her mother-in-law, basically giving up everything. Her mother-in-law was in the situation, same situation that we saw from the same situation that we saw from Lot, same situation we saw from Yehuda. She had lost everything. She had nothing left. And she said, leave me be. I'll live out my days doing nothing. Right? She says, don't call me Naomi anymore. Call me Mara. I'm bitter. I have a bitter life. I have nothing good going for me. And Ruth says, no, I'm going to stay with you. I'm going to take care of you. I'll make sure everything's okay. And she gives up any hopes at a future that she had. And finally, she goes to collect leket in the fields, and she comes across Boaz and Pasuk Ches over there. Vayomer Boaz al Rus, halo shamata biti, I heard my daughter, al techi lilkot b'stei acher, v'gam lo sa'avuri mizeh v'chosid b'kunim narosa. He says, I want you to only go in my field. I know what you did. Right, if you skip to Pasuk Gidala for a second, he says, she asked him, why are you being so nice to me? Hine hugad li, hugad hugad li, kol asher asisim chamoseich v'acharei mos isheich. I was told of all of the great chesed that you did for your mother-in-law after your husband died. You had every right to leave, and you didn't. You stayed with her, and I want to repay that chesed on some level. And not only that, in Pasuk Gidbeis, he says, and Yishalem Hashem Paleich Vatimaskurtech Shlema Miyem Hashem Elokei Yisrael Asher Bos Lachsos Tachas Kanafav. You came Tachas Kanfei Hashchina. You came under the wings of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You came to be part of the Jewish people, and Hashem should repay you for that, and he should take good care of you. I just wanted to go back 1 second. So when Boaz is being nice to her, so what's he really trying to do? I thought, I don't know, if I didn't see anybody who says this, but I thought maybe you can see, read what's going on a little bit. In Pasuk Ches, he says, don't go anywhere else. V'gam las lo sa'avuri mizeh, v'chos sid bakunim na'arosai. Should hang out with my young people. Einayech basad asher yiktsorun v'halachta achareihem. Should follow after them. Halot zivisi es hana'arim. I've told them that my young men, levilti nog'eich v'tzamis, v'halachti alakim v'shasiz me'acher yishavun hana'arim. I told the boys to be very nice to you, and I want to make sure you drink wherever they drink. He's saying, I don't know, I always got the feeling that Boaz was trying to make a shidduch here. I always got the feeling that he wanted to do Rus a favor. He said, Rus gave up any chances at a future that she had by coming with Naomi. He said, I want to make a future for her. I told all the boys to be really nice to her, so a nice boy will be nice to her. She'll be drinking water at the well with them, and she'll see a boy that she's interested in, and we'll make a nice shidduch. He says, we'll take good care of her. So, but what happens in the end? What happens in the end? Just skipping a little bit to Perek Gimel. Rus says, I don't want to make a shidduch with anyone but some. I don't want to make a shidduch with one of these nice young men. I want it to be someone who can carry on the name of my husband, someone who can carry on the name of my mother-in-law's husband, can carry on the family name. And that's when she finds out that he's a Goel. She wants to marry Boaz specifically, and she comes to him while he's sleeping in the Goren. He wakes up, there was a woman there. You should spread out your wings, right? Similar to the lashon that was used before. I don't just want to be tachas kanfei hashchina, I want to be tachas your knafayim. I want your protection. I want you to be my husband. And ki goel at, because you are a goel. I want to do yibum. I want to marry into the family of my dead husband and keep his name going. And also, as we'll see, to be able to keep the name of my dead father-in-law going as well. He didn't have any goelim either. And what does Boaz say? Brucha at la Hashem biti, heitavta chastecha ha'acharo min harishon. Right? He says, you've done a greater chesed now than you did before. Why? Levilti leches acharei bachurim imdali mashir. Because you could have followed after the young men, be they poor or rich. Right? So I thought that was the pshat, what he's saying before. He's saying, I tried to set you up with all these nice young men, and here you are coming after me? This is the greatest chesed you could have done. Really? This is a bigger chesed than what she did for her mother-in-law? Why is this such a big chesed? So, if you look in the Gemara in Bava Basra, we're not going to have time to read it inside, but Boaz is not mentioned in Sefer Shoftim, even though he was the Shofet. The Gemara in Bava Basra on Tzadik Aleph Amid Aleph points out that Boaz was the Shofet Ivtzon. And the Psukim say that Ivtzon lost all of his children. Right? The Gemara points out he had 60 children, and he lost them all. And it was a punishment for the fact that he was insensitive towards Manoach, the father of Shimshon, the eventual, you know, Shofet. He was insensitive. Manoach used to, he didn't invite Manoach to any of the simchas that he made for any of his children. He says, because he'll never be able to invite me back. So what's the point? So he didn't invite Manoach, and because of that, Hashem took away all of his children. And you have to understand, here's this old man. He thought, you know, he literally has a very similar situation to his ancestor Yehuda. He thought he had it all. He was the leader of Klal Yisrael. He had this huge family. And all of a sudden, everything goes away. He loses everything. He's left with nothing. And he's still a kind man. He sees a woman who did chesed for his... The Gemara earlier had pointed out his wife had just died the day Naomi returned. But he sees this nice woman who deserves a shidduch. He tries to make a shidduch. Where, let me do something nice for somebody else. And she says, no, I dafka want you. And he says, you're not giving up on me. I gave up on me. He says, I'm finished. You want me? He says, hey, that's a greater chesed than what you did before. Your mother-in-law only thought she was finished. I knew I was finished. I was destroyed. And you're telling me that I'm still worth it? You're telling me that I'm still something? And you're willing to do this chesed all for the sake of a man who basically, you know, Machlon was, I don't know what kind of a great guy he was. Hashem killed him off. Says, all for the sake of loyalty, all for the sake of trying to bring forth something great from something that wasn't so great. He says, that's the greatest chesed you could do. And in the end, we're not going to have time to go through everything, but in the end, we point out that that Rus married him. They had a son, and if you look on the last page, it points out that not only that, but what did they do with the son? She wasn't done doing chesedim. What did she do with the son? Vatikach Naomi esayeled, vatishiseu b'cheiko, vatihilo lo'omenes. And then what did everybody say after Naomi was nursing the child? It says, Yulad ben l'Naomi, vatikrena shmo oved hu avi Yishai avidavi. It was like Naomi had a new son as well. And Naomi earlier in the Megillah, we don't have time to do it, but pointed out, I'm not having any more children, and even if I would have any more children, it wouldn't come to anything with you. And here, not only did she save Boaz, she saved Naomi. She saved the lineage of her father-in-law as well as her husband. And she was able to do that tremendous chesed for everybody. And this is, I think, one of the main themes. There's many, many themes, but this is one of the main themes of what it means to give birth to the Melech HaMashiach, of plant the lineage of Mashiach. If you just look at the very end, I quoted from the Torah Tamima, it's really a medrash in Megillas Eicha, on the pasuk Chazdei Hashem Kilo Samu, source number 7. Amar Rav Shimon ben Levi, Mishah Kodesh Baruch Hu Misyayesh Min HaTzadikim Bolam Hazeh Hu Chozer Umarachim Aleihem. When we give up hope from the Tzadikim, Hashem then goes back and has mercy on them. And the Torah Tamim explains, what does the Medrash mean? The Eish Shenira Ki Bo Hara Lamarom Kotza Ad Shenira Ruach Yeush. Whenever we're in the midst of giving up hope, Oz Tovo Teshuas Hashem Keheravayim. That's when the salvation of Hashem comes in the blink of an eye. And this is one of the major themes of Mashiach that we always talk about, that the Yeshua Hashem can be bar keherifayin, because that's what went into the genealogy of Mashiach. Complete despondency. The men in the story that we quoted were completely depressed, despondent, lost. And the women brought forth, they said, no, there's still greatness there. We can salvage this situation. We can make something great from it. I didn't have a chance to explain it, but the great chesed of Yibam, that is the ultimate chesed, where you give completely of yourself, was done. And not only that, but even the original Yibam, which was a skewed misuse of chesed, was metukan by Rus. I didn't get to explain how, but she fixed the situation by doing a true act of chesed. And now both the Ammon and Moab part of the situation, the Moab part of the situation was on the Derech HaYashar, as well as the Yehuda part of the situation, and they were able to give birth to the Melech HaMashiach. I just want to close with this one thing. The Gemara in Bava Basra, an Amud later, points out from the Pasuk, when they're talking in Sefer Melachim about what Shlomo HaMelech built, Im HaMelech B'Melachto Yeshvu Sham, Zu Rus HaMoavia, She'rosa B'Malchus Shlomo, Ben Beno Shel Beno, She'nemar V'yosem Kisei Le'em HaMelech. When Shlomo HaMelech built his palace, he made a special throne for the mother of Malchus. For Amar Rabbi Lazar, Le'ima Shel Malchus, the mother of royalty of Rus. If you just think about where she was and where she ended up thinking she was giving up everything. She gave up everything. She gave up being some kind of a princess back in Moab to come and be a pauper with her mother-in-law, completely forsaking everything that could have been hers. And in the end, she sat on the throne watching the greatest monarch the Jewish people ever had in the greatest dynasty of the Jews. Everybody have a good young day.